Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast. I know you were all very worried that we weren't coming back, but we're here. Stephanie and Olivia, we're back. 2021, new year, same podcast, hopefully even more amazing than last year.
Don't know if that's possible.
But we apologize that our break was a bit longer than we planned for, but as you all know, it's been a very exhausting couple of months, and, you know, we just need a little break.
Nearly an exhausting year, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once you stop, it's just hard to jump right back in. But yeah, we're here. We're ready to go. We're well-rested, and it's going to be a great year.
It was summer break here, so I think that's why I found it a little bit hard to get moving again, because I had my kids at home for 6 weeks over summer break and all that. Anyway, so they've just gone back to school, so I'm ready for some quiet crime time.
And it's been the opposite here. It's been very cold and snowy, and, you know, I'm still working full time, so I just felt like a real winter slug. So yeah, it's hard to stay motivated sometimes, but I'm excited. I'm a little nervous because I don't want anyone to bully me in the reviews, so don't bully me in the reviews. Or I'll never come back.
Positive vibes only this year. That's our goal.
Positive 2021.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as life updates, I know you all care so deeply about my life. I don't really have any to begin with. I guess the lockdown here has gotten a little better. I mean, we can go get food. We can eat at restaurants. Still have to wear masks. All that. I feel like it's probably mostly the same most places around here. And I know over in Australia that you're faring much better.
Yes, thankfully. So last year just is all a bit of a blur, but we did really well corona wise towards the end of last year. I think it was November, we were almost at eradication apparently, which is where you have 28 days of no community transmission, but something went wrong and someone in quarantine, I don't think they even know how it happened, but basically it was a returned overseas traveler somehow spread it again. Here where it's mandatory that you have to do 2 weeks self-paid hotel quarantine when you come in from overseas. So I think it's about $3,000 per person or something like that. And you put up in a hotel, they give you all your meals, you're tested all the time and you can't leave unless you're negative basically. But something happened and it spread. So this was right before Christmas. It wasn't terrible. Like, it was what they did here was they had a new approach to what happened the first time, was when they actually just shut down postcodes and areas. So one area in Sydney, the Northern Beaches, went into full lockdown before Christmas for I think 3 weeks or something like that. And then so they've just kind of monitored it that way. And it seems to have, fingers crossed, worked, because I think we're at now 2 weeks without any community transmission. So hopefully that's it for us. So we were made to wear masks for the first time during this little outbreak over Christmas, but they finished that on Friday this week. So now you still have to wear them on public transport and, you know, in places where you're going to be close with other people for a long time, like a beauty salon or whatever, but you don't have to wear them in the mall or in just general day-to-day life, which is good, especially because it's been weird. 100% humidity here. So I know, you know, I wear masks. I have no issue with masks, but they aren't the most pleasant thing to wear when it's hot. So anyway, the kids went back to school as planned on Friday for my kids' school. So it's still quite limited in terms of what you can do. Like, parents aren't really meant to go into the school and all that, but they're back full-time face-to-face teaching, which is good. Been very lucky. Hopefully it can continue. Who knows what will happen though.
hopefully by the end of this year, it'll be all over.
I still can't even believe it all really happened. It's crazy, really. It just seems like a bad dream.
Yeah. Speaking of bad dreams, Facebook has been absolutely terrible.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Like, literally a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm sure anyone who has a Facebook has probably realized that they are, or just in Facebook groups, even just on your regular profile, Facebook has now set up algorithms, I guess, to auto moderate comments and things like that just by certain keywords. So you can't say things like bitch, even if you say it in like a positive way, like hell yeah, bitch, like you go girl, you're awesome, bitch. They're like, no. And you get a ding for bullying and harassment.
Kendall was saying you can't even call someone a potato now.
Really?
Yeah.
I say potato all the time.
I know. Like, I know they've got rid of like derogatory terms like cow, so you can't say you're a stupid cow, and you know, fair enough, whatever. But like, how are they going to auto mod cow? Are you really talking about a cow? Or it's just, it's ridiculous. And
what's the problem? They don't take context into any of it.
And there's also no accountability. Like, for example, in our group, I got an admin strike and I don't know what for. I approved someone's post and apparently that post went against Facebook community guidelines, which is fine, but we don't know what it was. So it's like when you click on it,
it said like invasion of privacy or something, but we didn't know what it was.
Yeah. And like we have pretty strict, I think, guidelines anyway for what we let through to post. So, you know, so I raised a ticket and said, what's the deal with this? Because apparently if you get a certain amount of admin strikes, they can shut your group down. So it's not just a little, you know, little misdemeanor. I feel like they need to have some accountability. If they're going to go and shut down groups and things like that and they're not going to tell you why, it's ridiculous. And I know it's just Facebook, but a lot of people, you know, make a living from Facebook.
But even just like you have all your photos and everything on there. Like I've had my Facebook since I was probably like a freshman in high school and I'm 29 now. So, I mean, I would lose a lot of stuff. Like you can download your data, which is good. I know some people have done that. It takes a very long time. But still, if you lose your profile, it's crazy to think how much stuff you lose. And also, even if we just lost our group, we started this group in 2017 and we've built it to over 200,000 people, and it would just be sad to lose it over something like the other day, one of the moderators, Kelly, she told someone who was misbehaving that this was, quote, a stupid hill to die on, and Facebook auto-modded it because it had the word die in it. And she got dinged for bullying, but she appealed it and then they took it back because they realized that they were wrong.
Yeah.
But it's just dumb stuff like that. And they've been closing all of our threads. So if we say the word gun too much, we think, like if someone was shot, we're trying to get people to use the gun emoji instead. So Facebook stopped shutting off our threads. And also, if you notice that we're being kind of stricter with what people are saying or what kind of threads we allow through, it's because literally our whole group and our personal profiles are at risk. So we have to really go by Facebook's standards versus our own standards, which people have complained about that we're being a little more strict, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, it's for the greater good, I guess. We have to do it if we want the group to keep going. So
yeah. It's either that or you don't got any true crime society. Use the gun emoji, bitches.
Yeah, put spaces between letters.
So that's that. But our group did break 200,000 members and our Instagram broke 20,000 followers.
I think it was on the same day even. Yeah, amazing. I still can't believe we had over 100,000 people join since February last year. So it was 11 months. We had 100,000 people.
Yeah, so it's been crazy.
Yeah. And yeah, I think it's still working well. Like it's a different dynamic now to what it was at the start. Anyway, we love everyone, 99% of everyone anyway. So I know it's just working out the best way to proceed based on what is happening at the time.
All right, well, enough boring stuff. So today we're going to talk about some things that have happened during our break, some updates on cases. We're going to talk about updates for Cat West, Gannon, mostly harmless. And then two cases that were interesting that happened during our break. One is Alexa Sharkey and one is Jason Landry that a lot of people were into, right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, so we're just going to do two quick updates on Kat and Gannon. So Kat West, I'm sure a lot of you know the story already. We have a group dedicated to Kat West. It was a kind of like a whirlwind of a case at the time. But Kat was found, her body was found half lying in the street in front of her house and half in her yard on January 13th, 2018. She wasn't wearing pants and she had the bottle of absinthe next to her and she had a head injury. A lot of people already suspected that her husband was involved somehow because it was very strange. They were seen out buying the absinthe together. They were apparently having like a date night, but it seems like things went wrong somewhere. So her husband, Jeff West, was eventually arrested and charged with her murder. He pled not guilty. And the trial finally happened in November, in the week of November 16th. So the defense argued that Kat went outside drunk after the argument and somehow hit her head, which I guess didn't really seem plausible to most people, especially since the medical examiner said that the injury to her head was most likely from the absinthe bottle and not from a fall. And so the prosecution argued that after they were drinking, the two had gotten into an argument and Jeff threw Kat's phone outside, which is where the police found it later. She went outside after it and Jeff went out after her with the bottle and struck her in the head, which is what ultimately killed her. But unfortunately, there wasn't a ton of evidence either way, so there was kind of room for reasonable doubt. Nothing. There was no, like, smoking gun that Jeff definitely did it. Yep. But he was charged with manslaughter, and he was found guilty of that. But it was just a weird case, because even Kat's family was defending him, saying he wouldn't do that. But it's kind of like, what else would have happened?
It was Kat's mother, I think, who defended him, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if she has... I haven't seen her say anything since all this happened, but...
Yeah, I'm sure he'll try to appeal it if he hasn't already, but...
I just saw that he's going to be sentenced on February 8th. It was meant to be early January, but that doesn't say why they moved it, but they've changed it to February 8th.
So that was the end of that one after 2 years waiting, basically.
I feel like even though, I know you say 2 years, it was actually quite a quick case. Like, I know he waited a while for a trial, but then the trial just happened and he was, like, that part of it seemed quick.
Yeah, that was all fast, but just there was a lot of in-between time.
Yeah, I guess when you said there isn't much evidence, so a week-long trial is plenty for that.
Yeah. The next, there's a small update to Gannon Stauch. As I'm sure everyone knows about that case, he went missing, his stepmom was super shady about it, and he was found dead, and she's been charged for murdering him. So he was an 11-year-old from Colorado Springs. He was reported missing a year ago, almost to the day. T is a stepmom. She was trying to say that he was leaving to go to a friend's house.
She basically implied he was a runaway. He'd, you know, taken off after he told her he was going to a friend's house.
Yeah. So in our group, this case was a really big one. We had over 100 threads on it. People were super invested in it. Some people even got tattoos. Everyone was super into Gannon.
Made t-shirts, yeah.
So like I said, his body was found in March 2020 and she was charged with this murder. She is still in prison awaiting trial, and she's been acting kind of crazy in prison. It seems like she's trying to go for insanity and trying to seem like she's not competent, but she was found competent to stand trial. So most recently, her attorney told the judge that she wants to request a conflict hearing. The judge told her that she'll have to write him a letter to explain why there's a conflict and why she would need a new representation for her case before he considers taking action. The prosecution is not engaged in any plea deals, and he doesn't intend to do so. So her preliminary hearing is March 11th and 12th. Hopefully that doesn't get pushed back. On the one-year anniversary, the Restoration Church released a statement on behalf of Gannon's father, Al, and it said, 1 year ago, Gannon disappeared. But if it wasn't for God's grace, the prayers of many, and my son's legacy, I would surely have quit. Moving on will never even be considered. But equally as an absolute, moving forward is the only option. Without my son, life will never be the same, and nothing can replace him. To all who will read this, hug your children and love them each and every day, like tomorrow is a precious gift that's never guaranteed. I thank God that he laid on my heart prior to 1 year ago, to have the conversation about eternity with my children. For only though my son confessing his faith in God do I know he rests peacefully at his feet in heaven. Sorry.
That's nice.
It's nice, but it's confusing to me as someone who's not religious.
Yeah. I think in times of grief and trauma like that, that's all he has, which is a nice comfort for him, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Next one we're going to talk about is Alexis Sharkey, which was a huge one that happened around Thanksgiving time. A lot of people joined and were invested in that. There was
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
MLM drama, so it was a big to-do. So
yeah, so it was November 28 last year, and people were trying to submit a post from a woman who was saying her daughter was missing. So we've got, this is all on the blog too, we've got screenshots, videos, everything. So if you haven't been and looked at the blog, it's at truecrimesociety.com. So all right, so it was from a woman called Stacey Clark Robinault, who was saying, please share this post. My daughter Alexis is missing. No one has heard from her for over 24 hours and the police are involved. She's lived in Houston since January and that is where she was last seen. Please help us find her. So had photos on the post of this beautiful young woman, you know, stunning looking girl. And we started to dig because it sounded very strange, really. So we worked out quickly that her name was Alexis Sharkey or Alexis Robinault. Sharkey was her apparent married name. She was an ambassador for Monat. Is that how you say that?
Monat, yeah.
Monat, okay. She was an ambassador for Monat, which is a MLM hair care brand, and she had a massive online presence through social media.
Yeah, she was definitely like a – her Instagram looks very curated. Like she was kind of like an influencer.
Yeah. And she had a TikTok where she was very active and things like that. So you would definitely call her an influencer. She'd been living in Houston, as the missing person post said. So if you want to go and see more kind of about what she was like, just you can go to her Instagram. One of her last posts is of her in Mexico. And, you know, she talks about how she wants to move there because it's got such a good vibe and things like that. So, you know, she lived a pretty seemingly exciting life. Based on online records that we found and Alexis's posts, we found that she'd married a man called Thomas Sharkey in December 2019, so about a year-ish before she went missing. We found an online marriage record for them, but still not 100% if they were actually married. I think they were, but there's been some debate as if, you know, if they were married or not. She'd spoken about postponing the wedding, actual wedding, because of COVID. But, you know, I don't know. I think they were married. That's my view on it anyway. Thomas was 49 at the time of all this happening and Alexis was 26. So Tom is also on social media. I don't want to say too much because he's
crazy.
I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, it did seem like a bit of an odd match. I think he worked in security maybe or something like that. You know, she's this stunning young girl. Anyway, who knows, whatever, her choice to...
He honestly looks like he could, like, be her dad.
Yeah, and he does have grown children who I think are similarly aged to Alexis, like maybe early 20s. So, anyway.
Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever floats your boat. So back to her disappearance. Alexis's mother posted online that she found out about Alexis being missing from both Tom and one of Alexis's friends. Her mother posted, "We were just notified of her being missing from her husband and her best friend. Last anyone heard from her was last night around 6. She had plans today that she missed and no one is able to reach her." So Alexis, I guess her group of friends were also quite big on social media, lots of other influencers. So they all started getting online and making pleas for her to come home and, you know, for any information. But there was still no mainstream media about the case. Right about the time that her friends started to make the posts, there was news that a body had been found in Houston in a ditch. The body was of a young woman in her 20s who was naked. We looked it up and we found that the body was found approximately 4 miles from the apartment that Alexis shared with Tom.
Houston police are investigating the death of a woman whose nude body was found on the side of the road. Police say a Public Works employee discovered the body off Red Hall Lane near I-10 at about 8 o'clock this morning. They say she had no visible injuries. The medical examiner will determine the cause of death and ID. The victim is described as a white woman in her early 20s. If you know anything about this, you're asked to please call HPD Homicide or Crime Stoppers.
So a day after we first heard about her disappearance, the case finally got picked up by the mainstream media. There's an article I'll read out quickly. It says, a mother is desperately searching for her 26-year-old daughter who has been missing since Friday. Stacey Robinault told Eyewitness News that she has not spoken with Alexis since just before Thanksgiving. She said Thanksgiving was a busy day on her end and our end, so it was just one of those passing type of love you things. Then Friday, honestly, Friday got away. It was a busy day. We never talked, and then she went missing Friday night, and I've not seen or heard from her since. Her mum said that she tried calling Alexis's phone, but all her calls went to voicemail. And then it says that Tom called the family to let them know that Alexis was missing. We were notified on Saturday that she was missing by her husband. He called us to let us know, and that's, of course, when any parent goes into full panic mode. So at the time, we weren't quite sure if Alexis's car was missing, but her mother did note it in this article, and it says that she goes by the name of Lexus or Lex and drives a white Jeep Rubicon. So it was still very fuzzy as to what had actually happened. You know, had she left in her car? What was going on?
It's like still mystery about her car.
Yeah, I've never actually, and I think I did read that Tom said the car was there, but maybe her mother didn't know that. So yeah, I don't really know what happened with that. But
you feel like she would only say that because the Jeep was missing or something. Why else would you?
Yeah. So we started to suspect pretty early on that the body surely had to be Alexis, the body that was found in the ditch in Houston. There's an alleged family member who is a minor, so we won't say the name, but they posted on social media saying, I miss her. She's dead. The results came in. I will never see her again. So we posted that in the group, and then people got mad about that, even though it was a public post, you know, because she's a minor. We removed any identifiers because they're a minor. But in the end, that minor was on public TikTok. So anyway, whatever. Doesn't. So then quickly after that too, Alexis's mother also confirmed the news. It says, it's with deeply broken hearts that Mike and I want to let you know that Lexi's body has been found. We cannot begin to thank you all for your love and the kind words you've extended to our family. Please give us this time to grieve this incredible loss to our family and this world. So as soon as it was confirmed, basically, Tom started to go a bit crazy on social media. He was just posting nonstop for probably, 24 hours, I think it was.
Yeah, and like before this, he hadn't posted anything really, right? Wasn't that a thing people were saying because he wasn't posting about her missing?
Yes. And then even I just had a look today and he hasn't posted on his Instagram at least since November. So since this happened, since November 30, he hasn't posted. But
just a funny side note that I always make fun of Olivia because she always just straight up follows these people with no shame. So his Instagram used to be public and she followed him and now he's made it private. So joke's on me because I can't see it anymore. But Olivia can.
You're not missing much. There's nothing new anyway. Yeah. But so he posted, you know, tons of photos of Alexis. And one of the posts he made is, I just want to say this. While some of you are posting on social media, helping us locate my world, we appreciate all your help, love and support. Others were wasting time talking about other things, basically crap talk. And if my wife would have seen this, she would have been disappointed in your actions. You all should be ashamed of yourselves. I have been assisting the deputies and making phone calls to find out what happened to my wife. Next time, stop and think and realize you don't know it all. So this is like the day that she was found because he hasn't made a post since November 30. So, and that's probably my time zone. So this is all happening right as she was found. He also made another comment. People are asking him, why aren't you posting, you know, about her before she was found, obviously. And he wrote, my apologies for letting you down, but I have been busy working with the Houston Police Department that is assisting with locating my wife instead of talking smack. Just so you know, I located her this morning. Now, if you would kindly go fuck yourself and go get into your life instead of meddling in everyone else's, please and thank you. So I don't know, people at the time were really closely scrutinizing his social media and there were things like, oh, he hasn't posted for 8 hours. He must be arrested. But clearly that's not true, as we'll get into. Mm-hmm. So once her body was found, her many, many friends started to come out and say that they thought Alexis had been planning to divorce Tom. They made posts with the hashtag justice for Lex, justice for Alexis, you know, things like that. We had thousands and thousands of people join the group to discuss her case, and many of them were Alexis's friends, and they all wanted to kind of spill the tea a little bit.
Just like to be clear, we got a lot of messages from her friends.
Yeah.
All of them think that her husband, Tom, had something to do with it, and they were not afraid to share details with us. We obviously didn't post them because they wanted to be anonymous, but they were just kind of telling us what they thought.
Yeah.
But more than one person
said
it to us.
And all the messages that we got were unsolicited, as in they sent them to us with no prompting. We didn't ask them to send them. They just wanted to share, it seems. So
I think that's because we were like one of the first people to really like post about it and quote unquote, like cover it, if you want to say. But I think that they just felt like they had a place to talk about it.
So I've just included two of the messages that we got. One's actually a social media post. It says, "Do you think it's ironic our girl was found dead 4 miles from her house, or that she had divorce papers ready to be signed the day she went missing? Go get him and give him the same treatment." And then Justice for Lex. And then so they've tagged Houston Police, ABC 13, Houston and True Crime Society in that one. We made the
very,
big league.
Very comparable. But also honored. Yeah.
Good company. Another message we got was, "Alexis's marriage was not perfect. She met someone while in Mexico and spent part of Thanksgiving with him. That is 100% true. What I don't know is the extent of the relationship, but word is she cheated on her husband. It is assumed her husband found out about this guy." So I will say also that other people messaged us and said that she didn't cheat on Jeff. She met a guy that she really liked in Mexico, but she didn't do anything because she was married. So we don't know what the truth is, but I just want to put that out there before anyone yells at us and says she didn't do it. We are aware of both sides. We don't know what the truth is.
Also, just to be clear, cheating isn't a reason to murder someone before anyone tries to somehow twist what we're saying into that.
We're just trying to tell all the sides of the story. You know, so that was what we were hearing. So Alexis's mother spoke to the media about her daughter too.
She was so excited about finding her way in the world. And even though we're from a small town and she loves coming home, it's beautiful here. She wants to see the world, always wanted to see the world. And if you know anything about her, or anybody knows anything about her, they know that she traveled as much as she could. We're very broken. We're very brokenhearted. It's just so painful for such something, someone so bright and having so much to offer, just to be gone, snuffed out. And I don't know why. I don't know why. And the horrific nature of her last moments must have been, I can't even go there. I do believe she was murdered, yes. From what I've been able to gather, as well as a mother's gut, I learned very young as a mom to trust my gut. And it's not let me down.
So more of her friends kept talking to other media outlets too. There was a really comprehensive article from the Daily Beast. It's on the blog, so I won't read it all, but some of the interesting things were her and her husband were going through a divorce. The decision to end her marriage came after a girl's trip to Marfa, Texas last month, where Alexis said that her husband had been putting hands on her. Throughout the trip, he was sending really awful, nasty messages to her. But one night when she and I were talking, she said, "He strangles me and chokes me out and I black out and wake up on the bathroom floor every time." And she'd also apparently told her friends that he was controlling and manipulative.
And there are pictures of her in Marfa, Texas, on her Instagram with her friends. So that seems to line up a bit.
Yeah. One of her friends, Kendra, also told the Daily Beast that she had mentioned being separated, even though they were living in the same apartment. And her friends said that Tom told them he'd gotten into an argument with Alexis before she went missing and claimed that she'd hopped over their patio fence and into a car. So, you know, the social media kept going. The man that Alexis allegedly met in Mexico, his name is Seb. I won't put his full name, but it's everywhere. Also posted about her on social media. So he reposted a post on Instagram that said, "I swear with every bone in my body, we will find justice for what happened to you, my sweet, loving Alexis." So he that was not his post, but he reposted that. Tom started to talk to the media as well. He made a 6-minute really strange interview with ABC 13, and he told them that he had been receiving death threats.
Alexis's husband, Tom, seen in pictures on her Instagram and on his Facebook profile, told me today he's now receiving death threats. Tom Sharkey says she wasn't always the happy person seen online, She was stressed. Quote, sir, my wife was an amazing woman. She really was. There's always other signs to everything. I was the one holding her, cuddling her, and building her back up. End quote. In the phone conversation, which felt disjointed at times, Tom Sharkey said he finally found Alexis. Quote, everybody was still looking for her, and I located her Sunday morning in the coroner's office. They couldn't ID my wife. They didn't know who she was. She was just there. End quote. When asked for more specifics and details, Sharkey abruptly ended the conversation, saying, quote, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not a jerk. I'm just destroyed. End quote.
So things went quiet very quickly with Alexis's case. She was found, you know, end of November. Everything went pretty quiet. There was a media interview with the worker who found Alexis's body.
For John Richardson, it's a Saturday morning he'll never forget.
It plays back in my head. You know, it's been playing back in my head every day.
He was at work for the City of Houston Solid Waste when Richardson says he got a call from an employee.
He said he thought he seen a body or a mannequin, so he wasn't for sure. He wasn't going to stop because he was kind of, you know, nodded, you know, he was scared or whatever case may be. So he asked me to come out there and check it out.
So as his supervisor, Richardson went to check it out and still can't believe what they found.
So as we was driving, we could see the feet, you know, so we got out and looked. And there it was, you know, she was laying there, deceased. She was no clothes on. And I just got on the phone and I called 911.
What Richardson didn't realize at the time, the body he had just discovered was 26-year-old Alexis Sharkey.
But it was pretty radio silence until December 7 when they released an obituary. But even I just had a look the other day and it's still never been updated that I can see. And all it says is Alexis Robinault Sharkey, 26 of Houston, formerly of Youngsville, passed away unexpectedly Saturday, November 28 in Houston. The Nelson Funeral Home have been entrusted with all arrangements and a complete obituary will be announced at a later date. So that was it. Went quiet. We waited. Everyone was going, what is taking so long? She was entered into the Harris County Medical Examiner website. So we kept, you know, updating, trying to see if they would announce the cause of death, but there was just nothing. Like, it was silence.
It was similar to like Cat West in that way, yeah, where it was kind of crazy. And then, you know, everyone automatically suspects the husband because it just seems the most likely. And people are waiting, waiting, waiting. And then you have like just a month at least of nothing.
Yeah. And so people obviously started talking, and the online rumors about what happened to Alexis seemed to be mainly circling around Jeff and also Alexis's friends.
You said Jeff, Cat West.
I'm getting them confused. Sorry, Tom. So people were speculating that Alexis had been dumped following an overdose, which was actually what I probably thought at the time as well, which would explain maybe why she was naked, you know, maybe. And then other rumors were that she'd been murdered by Tom or by maybe some of her friends who were quite jealous. I think they were the main ones. Can you think of anything else that people were saying?
No, I thought it was kind of crazy at the time that a lot of people were like, oh, someone's probably jealous of her, or like someone probably killed her. To me, that's like, I don't know, really unrealistic because I just can't. I mean, I'm sure it happens, but that just seems more like the stretch, like someone killing her because they're jealous. But also, to be fair, at that time, we didn't know like the cause of death.
Yeah.
But knowing how she died definitely points more so in a different direction.
Yeah. So that the obituary was December 7. There was nothing else really online until January 19 this year, when the Harris County Medical Examiner finally released her cause of death, which was strangulation.
There are new developments in the death of a popular social media blogger, Alexis Sharkey. An autopsy reveals she was strangled. Grace White shows us what's next in this investigation.
7 weeks is not long.
Retired chief of the Texas Rangers, Tony Leal, says cases like Alexis Sharkey's can take time to prove.
Medical examiner's office may have known it that night. They may have thought it that night, but they have things they need to rule out before they make that announcement.
So interestingly, over time from when she died to when her cause of death was released, the medical examiner site changed. She was always listed on there as Alexis Robinault, which was her maiden name, which is also partly why we wonder if she was actually married. But her original next of kin was listed as husband. But when her cause of death was released, the next of kin was changed to parents. So there's a lot of, and again, rumors online that Alexis's parents and Tom have been in conflict about her since she's died. That on January 18, it came out that Tom never claimed Alexis's body or stepped in to help arrange her funeral or burial. Her parents came and, with the help of the coroner's office, were able to gain custody of her body to make arrangements. Tom didn't do anything. He put in no effort.
He didn't even help, like, pass the custody rights or whatever you want to call them to her parents. He just apparently literally did nothing, which kind of lines up with the obituary still being, like,
yeah,
pending and, like, to be decided eventually. So it seems like they had some problems with her body being claimed, who was going to set what up.
Yeah. I do think that the Harris County Medical Examiner, now her body status is released. I think that's what the actual terminology is. So that leads me to believe that she has been finally released to a funeral home, or, you know, whatever is going to happen next for her. It's also been said that Tom is now living in his car, but that couldn't be confirmed or denied. Alexis seemed to be very, well, portrayed herself, I don't know, I'm assuming it's true, to be very successful with Monat. So I wouldn't be surprised if she was the breadwinner, really, if that was true.
Yeah, I don't
know. So maybe he can't afford the apartment, or, you know, I'm sure he's in some type of security, but they moved around a lot. He does have a criminal record. It's not related to the case, so it doesn't, you know, we won't go into it. But yeah, so her cause of death was released almost 2 weeks ago. At this time when we're recording, there's been nothing else. No one's arrested as far as we know. No one has seen any reports of toxicology for Alexis, which is what I also suspect they were waiting for, because they would have known that she was strangled by the initial autopsy in November or December. So my thought is that possibly they were also waiting for toxicology just to confirm that there was nothing else going on, or, you know, to maybe get all their ducks in a row for whatever's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's not really any reason that it would have taken, you know, I still think it's quite quick, as in, you know, nearly 2 months, but I feel like they could have confirmed strangulation straight away.
I think it's like you said, they just wanted to make sure it wasn't like she was drugged, like anything.
Yeah.
She was doing drugs, since for some reason people were saying that she could have overdosed. But one thing I want to say is that she has a ton of, like, great friends, and they were really vocal about trying to get justice for her, keeping her name out there, making posts about her. So, like, tons of friends, tons of great friends. So that was really awesome of them. As far as what I think happened, I do think most likely her husband had something to do with it for a few reasons. A lot of it just lines up. I'm sure people will, like, come for me for this, but just, like, the age difference kind of seems like she just looks very young, and he literally looks like Hubert's dad. I feel like sometimes in those situations, a guy is, not all guys, but sometimes a guy is looking for a girl who is young and easy to manipulate. She also did tell her friends that he has strangled her before, and
I was just going to say,
on the bathroom floor. So,
and now that we know how she died, that kind of all lines up with,
yeah, you know, like, people always say strangulation is like a crime of passion, which might line up to, if there was another guy she was talking to, maybe he found out about that, and that was just, like, the reaction. But I also thought it was interesting that she specifically said to her friends that she would, like, wake up on the bathroom floor, in terms of with her being naked. Like, did he strangle her in the bathroom often? Like, was she about to shower? Just kind of a weird connection that I noticed. But
yeah,
I do think that seems like the most likely thing that has happened, would have happened.
Yeah, but, I agree. I don't know. I guess it could be a totally random, but then for him to say that they got into a fight and she jumped over the patio and went into a car, which clearly probably wasn't true, because you know, there's no evidence that she was seen anywhere else. And, you know, so she would have had to, I'm assuming she wasn't naked when she jumped over the patio and into the car. So,
and I also think if that was true, there'd be messages on her phone with, like, whoever that person was, like, someone be like, I'm outside, or her being like, please come get me, like, me and him are fighting. So if that was true, like, police wouldn't most likely know who that person was.
Yeah. I feel like if it was Tom, I feel like it probably wasn't premeditated. I feel like it was just a rage thing. You know, he went too far. Maybe he found out, like you said, about what happened in Mexico, or that she was going to divorce him, and that he flew into a rage. I don't think that he, I don't know. I really don't know. But I agree that all signs point to Tom.
Yeah, surely. And especially her body was only found 4 miles from their house. It kind of seems like, what's it called? Like, heat of the moment.
Yeah.
And if he strangled her before and she's been fine, like, he went too far this time, panicked, just, like, drove down the road. And maybe she wasn't naked. Maybe he was like, oh, maybe if I take her clothes off, it'll seem like something else happened. Like,
yeah.
You just never know. But it definitely seems most likely that he was involved. And if not, that'll be a crazy story.
So we'll hopefully have some updates soon, but at the moment there's been nothing else released about Alexis's case, but we will definitely keep you updated.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the next one that we're going to speak about is another new case that happened over the break, and it's the case of Jason Landry. So I followed this one closely from the time that it started. I know there's some people in our group who are really, really, really super into it, so they've done tons of research if you want to need a rabbit hole to go down. But it was December 13 that this one started happening. We found a Facebook post about a missing man named Jason Landry. Jason was a 21-year-old man who went missing from Lulin, Texas. I'm not sure how you say it, but anyway, he had apparently been driving from his college in San Marco, Texas, to his home in Missouri City. The post said, "My friend's son Jason is missing. We need help finding him." Jason was driving home from Texas State to Sienna Plantation in the Houston area. Police found his car off Salt Flat Road in Lulin. It appears to be a single car accident and he hit two trees. His phone, wallet and all belongings are still in the car and he's not. There is minimal blood. Lisa received the call at 2 a.m., but they don't know what time the accident occurred. Best guess is sometime between 9 p.m. and 1:30 a.m. So I had a look on Google Maps. The entire drive from the college to his home should have taken around 2 hours and 45 minutes. But for some reason, his car was found only about 30 minutes from the college. So, you know, 30 minutes after he left. So if you look at the photos of the car, it seems very strange for kind of a one car accident because there's damage to the front and the back of the car. And it's quite a lot of damage. Like I don't think it would have been drivable. I assume it would have been written off eventually. So the initial reports were saying that he possibly spun out and hit trees, which I guess would explain the damage. So if he hit it at the front and then it spun and then hit more trees at the back.
If it was trees, he would have had to spin out, hit one tree on his front driver's side and hit another tree on his back passenger side. Like the damage is on the two opposite corners of the car mainly.
It's weird. And it doesn't look like there's any damage to the side of the car either. So it looks like it was like a clean spin almost from the photos that I can see.
Several agencies and even locals like Stuart Carter have been looking for Jason.
It's thousands of acres. And today I'm searching close to the roads as possible. I think he's trying to go, you know, he's heading for help and he might have lost energy.
We're still concentrating on some areas such as the creeks and the water, but right now we still haven't found him.
Sergeant Dion Cockrell with the Texas Department of Safety says they are being thorough.
Video, cameras, whatever we can use to scour the area.
As Jason's family waits, his dad has a message for his son.
We just want you home. Nothing else. Nothing else matters. I love you, son.
At the time, the police report was shown on Fox 7. So it says, notes, unable to inventory vehicle, keys in ignition, vehicle doors locked. Black backpack found approximately 100 feet south of the crash location on the road, which contained narcotics and wallets suspected to belong to the driver of the vehicle. So the interesting bit in that is narcotics, really. Like what... You know, what were they? Why did he leave them behind? So that kind of started a lot of the discussion as well. So the sheriff who worked on this case was Sheriff's Sergeant William Miller. He said that they initially didn't think there was any cause for alarm because they often find abandoned vehicles as it's a remote area and that the owners of the vehicles usually come forward to claim them. Obviously, that didn't happen.
That's just kind of weird in itself, but okay.
Yeah. They said at the time that they couldn't access his cell phone, even though it was in the car, because of the type of security code he used. It may take months to unlock it. So they said at the time that they were trying to subpoena companies like Facebook and Google, but it might take a very long time. A few days after Jason disappeared, the Texas Department of Public Safety's Sergeant Dion Cockrell said, "Right now, we have no indication of foul play at all. We don't know if maybe someone picked him up or if he just wandered to an area where we haven't searched or found him yet." Texas Equisearch also sent crews out. This was all, you know, within days of him going missing. They searched for 9 days. They used a helicopter with infrared cameras, drones, side scan sonar, scent dogs, people on foot, ATVs, and horseback. There was an abandoned house in the area, and there was a rumor that's never been confirmed that Jason's scent was tracked to that house, but they searched it and he wasn't there. So on December 22, which was 9 days after the accident, Texas Equisearch announced that they had searched the area thoroughly and they couldn't do anything else without new information from law enforcement. Basically, they'd looked everywhere they could, which is they are usually quite successful in their searches, but it doesn't seem like they found much at all.
Mm-hmm.
Jason's family, I think, were quite active within their church. So the church Facebook often gave us updates. They talked about things like they pumped a pond. Due to the size, it won't be fully pumped until tomorrow. 5 scent dogs made their way to this pond, but I'm certain nothing has come of that. So their church updates just talk about how they, you know, keeping their faith and things like that. So
it's
not
like highlights
a whole lot
of the daily search.
Yeah. So when I started to write the notes for this, the most recent article up until yesterday was January 11. So, you know, about 2 weeks of nothing. And the article said, "Nearly a month after disappearing from a rural South Central Texas road, Jason Landry's whereabouts are unknown. They released a new photo of Jason, which he does look quite different from the original missing person photo that they released. He looks a bit less clean cut, maybe a bit more ragged. I don't know if that is the right word to use, but he does look different. So they also said at that time that they found clothing approximately 900 feet from the crash site. They didn't really give much more information than that. So this is all we had to go on for, you know, it's 6 weeks now. There was basically no real confirmed information until luckily yesterday, thankfully, we got an update before we actually started this podcast. I was going to put it in at the start, but I thought it would be more useful to include it now because to show how little information there was up until this point. So the Caldwell County Sheriff released a statement. I'll read the whole thing because there's a lot of information in it. It says, "The Caldwell County Sheriff's Office continue the search for 21-year-old Jason Landry, who is considered a missing person." They talk about the search that they've done. And it says, "Investigators have now gained access to most of Jason's phone and computer data. Investigators are still waiting for some search warrants from social media and tech companies." It says, "Investigators now believe that Jason left his apartment in San Marco at 10:55 p.m. on the 13th of December with the intent to travel to the Missouri City, Texas area where his parents live. At 11:05, Jason was driving his vehicle on Highway 80 and passed under I-35. He continued to drive south on Highway 80, entering Caldwell County at 11:07. At 11:11 p.m., Jason was in Martindale, continuing south on Highway 80. At 11:15, Jason passes over SH-130 on Highway 80. So it goes through basically every place that he went through. I'll stop reading them because your eyes will probably glaze over. But it says, so the first notation of time is 11:05. And then it says, at 11:24 p.m., Jason entered the city of Luling on Highway 80. He goes through the intersection on Hackberry Street where Highway 80 becomes Austin Street. There, Jason quits using the Waze application and begins using the Snapchat application on his cell. Jason continues to Austin Street to the intersection of US Highway 183. It is believed that he went straight through the intersection onto East Austin. At this point, his digital footprint essentially stops. It is believed that he continued onto East Austin onto Spruce, which turns into Salt Flat Road. Jason's vehicle is found abandoned in the 2300 block of Salt Flat Road at 31 minutes after midnight. So, but then it goes on to say that's an approximate 67-minute window between the last data footprint at Austin and Magnolia and the discovery of the crash site. His phone still had cell signal and was powered on, and investigators are trying to determine why he didn't use it at the end of that, you know, just before the accident. Jason's vehicle was abandoned, lights on with the keys in the ignition and the front passenger side locked. The vehicle collision is a single vehicle collision, most likely from overcorrecting on the gravel road and spinning off the roadway. So then it talks about that he drove when he had the accident, it propelled the front driver's side into another tree and a barbed wire fence. no evidence that anyone else is involved. And just keeps talking about the accident as well. The people who responded to the scene did not enter the vehicle. It was towed to an impound yard where the next morning Jason's father got into the vehicle and found his phone between the driver's seat and the center console. They don't know if it fell while Jason was driving the vehicle or during the crash. And Jason's father was the one who found the clothing 900 feet from the collision scene. They found his shirt, shorts, socks, underwear, slide sandals, and a watch in the road. They were collected by police. So weird. And then they also found a single blood smear on the clothes. The blood spot was small and is not indicative of serious bodily injury. They think that that blood spot may have actually came from Jason exiting the car because he might have come into contact with some barbed wire.
Why is there barbed wires?
And they also found more things, which all these things seem to be in the road. So I don't know why he kind of took them out of the car anyway. But so they found a backpack, ball cap, a plastic bag of personal toiletries, and the weirdest thing, a tumbler with his deceased betta fish in it. So he's taken his goldfish, obviously, to go home for Christmas, but I guess he put it in a cup. And then the fish was dead. Anyway, so in the backpack, there was a wallet, a usable amount of marijuana, a laptop, gaming equipment, and a few personal effects. Any report stating the backpack was filled with narcotics is inaccurate. It was just a small amount of marijuana. And this is the most interesting bit, I think. It says, there remains a possibility that the marijuana was combined with an unknown hallucinogenic substance. These findings are pending. So they believe that the clothes that were found in the road are the clothes that Jason was wearing that night. So that's interesting. They said there was a low that night of 36 degrees Fahrenheit with a high of 43 degrees. So it goes on and just says there's no evidence that Jason was traveling to meet with anyone or had communicated intent to meet with anyone around that area. So they're still not quite sure what he was doing there. So I think that clears up a lot of uncertainty that was surrounding the case, but still so many questions. I asked the people in the group, or we asked the people the other day, what their theories were. And I know that now they've spoken about all the clothes that were found. So they were saying that maybe he became hypothermic. And there's a term called paradoxical undressing, is a term for a phenomenon frequently seen in cases of lethal hypothermia. Shortly before their death, the people will remove all their clothes as if they are burning up when they are in fact freezing. So I tried to see if that could have happened within that half an hour, of when his car was crashed and when he was found, because that seems really quick to me. I know it was cold, but
it wasn't cold, but it wasn't dangerously cold that you would.
I feel like it wasn't hypothermic in half an hour, especially when he had clothes on. Like, it's not like he was naked to start with. He had clothes on. And so I feel like to get to that point of undressing, it would have taken a lot longer. I could be wrong, and Google hasn't really helped me.
It makes me think, you know, how we've talked about it, but how they said that the weed could have been laced and there was still testing it. Personal story, so sorry parents if you're listening. When I was younger, I used to smoke a lot of weed, and one time I smoked with my friends like normal. I was like only in my teens. I just remember we were at a golf course and we smoked, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden like these huge like cockroaches started falling from the sky, and they were like landing on my legs. I was kneeling in the grass, so I kept like brushing them off my legs, and as soon as I brushed one off, like another one would fall from the sky and land on me, and I'd brush it off, and it just kept happening. And like all of us were just freaking out, being like hallucinating basically, and you know, we had no idea what was going on, but we were like freaking the fuck out. So finally it like goes away, whatever. The guy the next day who sold the weed to us was like, oh, like how was smoking that weed the other day? And we're like, it was fine. He was like, oh, word, it was laced with PCP. Like, what? You're gonna sell weed laced with PCP to a bunch of teenagers? But like, imagine if maybe he smoked before he got in the car, was gonna drive home, and then like you just start fucking hallucinating. Like, you could have, yep. When you don't know you're smoking something that's laced, you're like, what the fuck is happening?
And I know that someone else messaged the page who, I don't think they knew Jason, but they were very familiar. I think they went to the same college and lived in the same area. And they said there's actually no way he should have been in that area. Like, there's no need to go through there. Like I think it has to be drug related. There's something going on, whether it's the laced drugs, whether he took something else. I feel like it has to be drug related.
Yeah, it's
very the strange. Area where he went missing is very remote. Like, I've put a Google Map, you know, satellite image in, and there's basically nothing around. So,
and didn't they say it was like a gravel road?
Yeah. There's been actually someone who knows Jason, and they posted this in the group yesterday. So I've included it because I think it kind of probably supports what happened to him. It says, knowing Jason, he's a very heavy pot smoker. After reading this update, there's no doubt in my mind whatever he was smoking at the time was laced. No experienced user gets high and crashes their car. At the same time, the amount of pre-rolls found makes me think he was going to sell them once he got back home. For all we know, he's on the craziest zinger of his life, which I don't think is true. I think he's probably has passed from exposure somewhere and they just haven't found him yet. I'll be surprised if it's anything else, but you never know. It could be. But it's just such – it reminded me of this case. There's a lot – actually, randomly, there's a lot of other similar cases. There's the case of Brandon Lawson, who also went missing in Texas, I think 2013 or something like that. And he called 911, said he needed help, and that basically people were chasing him. And he's never been found. And then there's another case of a guy called Brandon Swanson, all the Brandons. He called his parents and said he'd wrecked his car and could they come and get him. And basically where he thought he was is not where he was. And he was on the phone to his parents trying for them. So he's like, I can see lights and things like that. And then he all of a sudden he said, oh, shit. And the phone died. And he's never, ever been seen since. That was in a different state, though. That was Minnesota. But still just randomly, like people, there are a lot of people who go missing after car wrecks.
It even reminds me, not with the car wreck, but just like Tyler Davis in a way where he's like, was drunk, was on the phone, and then he's just literally fucking gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's so crazy that people could just, you know, like where they were and just no one can find them. They're just gone.
And it's just also interesting to me that he stopped using Waze and got on Snapchat. I wonder why. Like,
maybe he was hallucinating and saw something crazy and was like, yo, I gotta Snapchat this.
Who knows? He could have just got distracted, but it's weird that he shut Waze down. Like, that's what it sounds like to me. Like, he turned it off. He didn't need it. Anyway, I'm glad we were able to record with that update because I feel like it you know, answers so many questions. Yeah, but still just a strange one that we will keep you updated on. And Lizzie did a really, really good blog on that case. It's up on truecrimesociety.com. It's got screenshots, maps, everything. So if you want to have a bit of a deep dive into the case, go and check it out.
Next, we're going to talk about the really huge update surrounding the unidentified hiker, Mostly Harmless. I'm sure all of you know about this case. We did a whole episode on it. So if you don't know about it and you want to hear about it before we get into the update, just go back and listen to the episode because it was very involved. It was a good episode.
And also check out the blog too, because there's tons and tons of photos and background and all that on there.
Yeah. So summary, Mostly Harmless was the trail name of a man who was found deceased in his tent on July 23rd, 2018 in Big Cypress National Preserve in Florida. Over all this time, a lot of people recognized him, knew him, saw him on the trails, but they only knew him by Mostly Harmless or Ben Billamy, which were not his real names.
Or Denim. So,
oh, right, or Denim. But Denim. No one knew his real name, his real identity, anything like that. So for all this time, they've been trying to figure out who this guy was, and finally it happened. He was finally identified over 2 years later in December 2020, unofficially, which caused a lot of drama because people who recognized him started talking on social media, but Collier County Sheriff's Department was not officially confirming it yet. But once people saw the photos, like, it was 100% him, looked just like him, and people were like, no, that's definitely him.
Sometimes when you see a photo, you're like, oh, it could be. There is absolutely no way this guy was not the same guy.
And he did look different because in the photos he was going through more of like a grunge type look.
Goth.
And had longer hair, but you could just tell from his face it was 100% him.
Yeah.
And it kind of all, we were hearing rumors that, you know, people knew who he was, that he was going to be identified. And then, like Olivia mentioned before, we have our blog. We've had this blog for a while. Someone commented on it named Randall, and he said, I knew him, lived with him for years. I'm in contact with the detective on this case. Notebook was pseudocode for a MUD multi-user dungeon. We both played a lot of them. Looks like he was creating a procedurally generated one where the mobs in the game actually built new areas, which is neat. Scar was from a self-inflicted gunshot wound when he was young. He always donated blood afterwards due to the large amount that he needed to stay alive afterwards. So then, you know, that was kind of crazy that this guy just commented on our page.
Yeah.
And Olivia then commented back and asked him if he had any other info, anything he could share. And he said, yeah, I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say. I'll talk to the detective again tomorrow and ask. Then another person commented and said, how do you know it's the same guy? What city do you guys live at? How long ago did you see him? Can you say anything like that? And then another person commented under the name Shell, and she said, because he, like myself, recognizes his picture, he was a longtime friend, roommate, and travel companion who we lost contact with. So it seemed like these people were pretty certain that they knew who he was.
And I'll just say, like a total crime creep that I am, I went and I kind of did some research on these people, and I'm sure now they were legit, but at the time I also thought they were legit because I found their address and we found, so we did some cross-checking of different addresses and found where they'd both lived together. So then we could look and see who had also lived at that address at the same time. So we kind of had an idea of his name eventually too before it was released. Yeah.
At that time, his name was figured out. It came out. People were posting it around, like it was on Reddit. We weren't the only ones to post his name. So it's not like we're these big assholes being like, let's break the news. No, it was, people were talking about it all over.
It definitely, his name was definitely posted on Reddit anywhere, I think, before it was posted anywhere else.
Right. So it turns out he's a guy named Vance Rodriguez. But we've talked about this before in the last podcast. There are a lot of people very involved in this case. Like, it's almost like they're writing fan fiction about him in some way, like creating this story of his
life. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Life and how he's this amazing guy, and they have no idea about him, but they're very attached to him and their perception of him.
I think a lot of them have literally spent probably hundreds or thousands of hours trying to find out who he was. And I don't know, like, I know people say we knew he was Vance, we've known it for weeks or months or whatever, but then I also question if they actually really did know that, and if they would have figured it out if the roommate didn't come forward everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
I don't know. So they'll probably come and shoot me down and say, we knew it.
100%. If they hear this episode or someone tells them to listen to it, they will try to roast us about this, but it is true.
Yeah. And I know even now, since this has all come out, like, I know one of them is going to be, has been interviewed for TV. Like, they're really, really, really
involved.
Yeah. Possessive of it and involved. Yep.
Yeah, they will fight you.
I will say it's probably one of the strangest cases I've seen for this type of behavior. It's just so...
it's like obsession. It's weird.
It is. Obsession for someone who they never met. Anyway, I know you'll keep going because we'll talk about the rest.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
but anyway, so these people tried to, like, give us a hard time, being like, how dare you, like, leak his name, his family, blah, blah, blah. It's like, girl, his family didn't care about him for 3 fucking years. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, it came out that he is Vance Rodriguez, who was born in February 1976 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Like we said, 100% him.
Yep.
Nicholas Thomas wrote a really great article for Wired, which is where I got a lot of this information from. I didn't post all of it, so if you want to read the whole thing, definitely check it out, because he interviewed a lot of people who actually knew Vance. So some of the takeaways were, like I said, he was born in February 1976, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He had a twin sister and an older brother. And as we said in our last episode, he did tell people that his father was abusive and deeply hurt him in some way, but no one could really say specifically how, like if he beat him or what happened there.
Yeah.
But he seemed to really hate his parents. And like Randall said on our post about him, he said that the scar was inflicted from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, which it was. And when Vance was 15 years old, he walked out to a field with a gun to kill himself and shot himself in the stomach. But as he laid there bleeding, he realized he didn't want to die and waved down a trucker to help him. So the scar that he had is from the surgery that followed that. That seems like it lines up with maybe his father abusing him. It's hard to say because there's nothing out about that, but it seems to line up that he had some.
He obviously had a lot of things going on at 15 to do that.
Yeah, like it's very young. Who knows?
Yeah.
So then at 17, he was actually legally emancipated with the consent of his parents by a Lafayette, Louisiana court. So his parents agreed to let him be emancipated. So seems like there was not a great relationship there.
Yeah.
A woman named Marie was interviewed for the article. She is an old friend and former roommate of his, and she said that Vance was angry that his parents had institutionalized him after the suicide attempt. She said he would not talk about his parents except to say, fuck them. So all on par so far.
It sounds like he really didn't have a lot to do with any of his family after he became emancipated. So
yeah, it seemed like he really disliked them.
Yeah.
So after graduating high school, he enrolled at University of Southern Louisiana, and there he met fellow computer enthusiast Randall Godso. That is the Randall who commented on our page, and the two became roommates and friends for the most part. Randall said he remembers Vance playing games for 18 hours a day, shutting everything else out. He said that he said, quote, he would go through huge bouts of depression. He'd go for a year without smiling or being nice to people. He also confirmed that Vance had cut off all contact with his family and didn't remember Vance ever showing any interest in spending time outdoors or hiking or anything.
It's like so strange, isn't it, that he's gone from one extreme to the other, really?
Yeah. Anyway. It seemed just kind of like a fuck it moment.
Yeah.
He didn't graduate from college, but he had really great computer coding skills and was a really great computer engineer. So he didn't have any issue finding a job. He worked for a company called Shopper's Choice, and there is actually a photo of him wearing the uniform with the logo on it. And he was recognized as one of the most talented engineers on the team. His friends said some weird quirks about him were that he ate once a day, usually a pizza from Walmart. He wore black jeans, black shirt, black trench coat. He had long, dark hair almost down to his waist, but one day he cut off all his hair and gave it to Locks of Love.
Well, he did one nice thing in his life.
It seemed like he was like generally isolated and unhappy, but sometimes he did nice things.
Yeah. And like, it does sound to me, before anyone comes at me, because I know they will, it sounds like he was very mentally ill. So,
Yeah, definitely.
So I get that. I do get that.
Don't leave us a mean review comment being like, me. His friends, Marie specifically, said that he would go on what they called outages, where he would lay immobile for days, refusing food and all human contact, but eventually he would snap out of it. And she said he wore his sadness like an extra layer of skin. Mm. So while in Baton Rouge, Vance started a relationship that would last for 5 years. It ended very badly. When it was over, the woman that he dated wrote on Facebook, apartment, $950 a month, like a list, apartment, $950 a month, bills, $300 a month. Standing up to the monster that beat you up emotionally and physically for 5 years, priceless. After Vance was identified as the hiker, her mother commented on Facebook and she said, my daughter was Vance's girlfriend of 5 years. This man was so abusive to my daughter, he changed her. She could not spend any quality time with her family the whole time they were together. She said he had schizoaffective disorder. He did not like me. I called him down for not answering the door when I went to check on my daughter. I was so relieved when they finally broke up and he had the gall to kick her out of her own apartment. So seems like not the best situation.
And then she wrote on social media too, didn't she? Or is that someone else?
Yeah, Yeah, that's the same girlfriend. So I somehow was able to figure out through the mother who she was. And she does have some posts open on her Facebook. So I found some other posts of her talking about that. One, she said, I'm so tired of having dreams about him. I'm a vivid dreamer, so not only does it hurt over and over when we make amends, but it hurts twice as much to wake up and realize there is still no closure for what he did. I think it's going to be a long day.
And that was from 2011, so this was obviously, you know, right.
Yeah, this was a long time ago.
Yeah,
before he moved to New York and all that. But she had a lot of support from her friends, so it kind of seems like a lot of people knew about the situation. Another post from August 2012, she said, the last man that called me stupid left a scar that will last a lifetime on my confidence, once before, never again. And she did make posts about she also worked at Shopper's Choice. They worked together. So I'm confident this is the correct person. Yeah. And there are posts where she says his name, but whatever. After they broke up in 2013, he began dating another woman that he met online. Like, I don't think they had ever met before that. And the two decided to move to New York and move in together because she worked in fashion. So it'd be great for her to be in New York. And Vance, I guess, just didn't care and wanted to move to New York. So she said, the article refers to her as Kay. She said, at first he was romantic and sweet, but soon started to clam up and shut her out. She said, if something upset him, he would stop talking to me completely, which can be very lonely when you share a 500 square foot apartment. He and Kay went out maybe once a month, she recalls. She would ask him if he wanted to travel, and he would respond that he didn't need to travel because he could easily look up photos online, which is kind of funny considering he went on this, not funny, but ironic considering he went on this long Appalachian Trail hike. She also said he did open up to me about previous women that he knew and how he treated them. They should have been red flags. She stayed with him despite her foreboding. She said at one point he locked me out of our apartment after I got out of the shower without clothing because he started arguing about something I can't even remember. That wasn't the only time he locked me out. So it seems like that was something he did with both women mentioned because the mom said that he would lock out the other girl too. On a Saturday night in September 2016, Kay was injured when a terrorist set off a bomb on West 23rd Street in Manhattan. For the record, I was there. She said, I had pretty bad PTSD, to which he hated caring for me. Even kept a dated log of every time I needed help, to the point where he left me outside in the dark, knowing that at that time I couldn't be outside alone or be in the dark without panicking. And then she added, and this is only the light stuff. So apparently there was worse situations that she didn't want to talk about. So around this time, according to Kay, Vance also made a threat that was both terrifying because of his skills and ironic because of the anonymity that he ended up wanting or having. He threatened to dox Kay if she ever left him, but she still moved out that winter. And he reached out to Randall, who remembers worrying that Vance would commit suicide. In mid-April, he posted his last message in the Screeps Slack community, which we talked a little bit about in the other episode. It's just an online game forum. So he stopped posting there in April 2017. His landlord said it seems that he left in a hurry when he went into the apartment after not hearing from him. 8 months later, he found unopened food in there, Vance's passport, his wallet, his credit cards. Seems like he just up and left. The journalist from Wired asked Kay, the ex-girlfriend, if she thought he'd become a different person since, like we said, everyone who had met him on the trail was like, he was so nice. Like, they really got to know him. He seemed like a great guy. So he was wondering if she thought, like, did he become a different person or, like, what happened here? And she said, he was personable when he first met him, but after spending more time with him in an intimate way, his personality completely changed. The people on the trail didn't spend years with him to see how he handled ups and downs. Maybe he was good at code, switching and hiding the person he was behind doors with me or others. I think it just hurts that he was capable of being this person with complete strangers, but when it came to us, he couldn't even be a decent human being or treat me or my body with any dignity, which is sad, it seems like.
Yeah.
Seems like she still has some trauma from that, which is unfortunate. His friends, I guess the journalists asked what they thought happened, and they said that they believe he didn't seek help while he was starving out in the woods due to one last major outage. Kay said that, I know when he had to deal with anything, he would just lay down and sleep. And she said, I feel like that's what happened. He would ignore problems and just sleep till it was gone.
I wonder what he would have been, maybe just past trauma, because like there doesn't seem to have been anything else that could have worried him at, like, you know, do you know what I mean? At the time then, he had cash, he had all that. So I don't know. Be interesting anyway.
Yeah, like what triggered him to just be like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Maybe he just had nothing else. Because it seemed like he moved to New York to be with that girl.
Yeah.
And then maybe after that, he was like, maybe he was finally fed up with wasting away in his apartment and wanted to do something productive. But, you know, he wasn't really experienced in hiking and then kind of maybe just gave up.
I guess also based on his past, it makes it clear that he wasn't the most well person or rational person or anything like that. So I guess it's not, shouldn't really be surprising if that is what happened.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, like we said, like there's so many people out there that even hearing all this and reading all these interviews, they still have this idea of him that he was this great guy that they thought he was going to be. And yeah, they will literally like shame these women he abused and be like, was it that bad? Like, what did you do to deserve it? It's just, very strange. I took some comments that I just had saved on my phone because I thought they were really gross. But yeah. Remember the mother's comment that I read before about how Vance had abused her daughter, blah, blah, blah. Someone responded on that Facebook post to the mother and said, if he was so abusive, where are the police records? There's always whoremongers like you trying to step forward for a few minutes of fame. Maybe your daughter was the nutcase. Like, what?
And that comment was made after he was identified. So this woman went and sought out these posts from, you know, however many years ago to make that comment on. That is revolting.
Yeah, it's just like one of those things like, you know what? Think that if you want, if you're uneducated and don't understand abuse. Yeah. But like to come that to her fucking mom, it's so gross.
It's disgusting.
So then I thought another thing that was interesting was there's people who were like obsessed with him and like finding out his story and want to know everything about him. Now suddenly that the abuse came out, they're like, it's not our business who he was before. Like, it's not our business. We shouldn't be talking about it. And it's like they have this idea that Ben and Vance aren't the same person. So one person, we'll call her E, was very vocal about this. And one of her comments in response to someone said, exactly. We didn't know him before he hit the trail. And to be honest, it's none of our business. I feel like the people talking shit about him are the ones who never cared for him and have absolutely no respect for his loved ones or the fact that this man has passed and can't defend himself. Hell, even the girlfriend whose mom ran her mouth says she still loves him and had nothing bad to say about him. He'll always be mostly harmless and Ben to me. I don't know Vance, but I'm glad he's home. So that just shows the weird
obsession,
keeping mostly harmless and Ben on a pedestal as if he isn't Vance.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they just don't want to admit they were wrong. But I did think it was interesting that one of the girlfriends said, you know, that they'll always like love him and like it makes them sad. And some people use that as an excuse to be like, oh, well, if he was so bad, like she wouldn't love him still and blah, 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 which I think is dumb because he was clearly mentally ill and you can still have compassion for someone who's mentally ill, even if they did you dirty. You still want the best for them and it's still overall a sad story.
Yeah.
And you don't want to talk shit about someone who's dead, like while she's being interviewed for an article. You still, like, you don't want to be like, he was the worst piece of shit ever. It's just not human nature to be like that.
Exactly. And then also, it's been a while since, you know, I guess 4 or 5 years or whatever, but she has probably done some healing in herself as well. So she, you know, I'm sure there were some good times with him and maybe they did love each other. So you don't always have to forget that just because someone is abusive to you. It's if you want to feel like that about your ex, that's up to you. It's no one else's prerogative to say what they think someone else should be doing.
Yeah, I don't think her saying that means that he wasn't a piece of shit.
No, absolutely, I agree. And the other thing about that comment from E that you said, it's like, we didn't know him before he hit the trail. And to be honest, it's none of our business. They made his whole entire life their business. They made groups for him. You know, it's just, and now.
They yelled at us for posting a photo of his scar. Like,
and now that his actual story doesn't fit their narrative, they're like, no, none of our business. We shouldn't be worrying about it. You know,
I think everyone,
because all the comments and people who met him along the trail, he seemed like a nice guy. Like he seemed maybe a bit eccentric and all that, but he seemed kind and nice and happy and all those type of things. And when it turns out that he was actually generally the opposite, like, no, not our business, let's move on.
Yeah, so we don't talk about that part.
Yeah, we just only talk about the part that we know, which is him on the trail. Just forget about the rest of the 38 or however many years of his life he was before he went on the trail.
Yeah, but that's that. Overall, an interesting story and a strange story. That
I feel like this is one of the cases where the mystery was better than the reality.
I don't know. I feel kind of satisfied.
I think it's super interesting. Like, I'm glad that we got answers, but I feel like
it was underwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, people who I know will not like that, but I feel like it's a sad ending for what was actually a really interesting mystery.
Yeah. And it is sad. He clearly had mental illness. Clearly his family wasn't really there for him.
Yeah.
And it really is just like an overall sad story.
I can't remember if you included, I know you had it in your notes, but that his dad and I think another family member also actually joined our group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so his abusive father, before it really came out when it was just rumors, I figured out who most of his family members were just by looking them up because I just wanted to see if anyone had said anything about him. But his dad did join our group but he never said anything. And maybe just he left after we checked again, but he was there for a bit.
Which is interesting. So they obviously, I have no doubt that maybe it was the detectives who contacted him, but I have no doubt there was other people who also contacted them to let them know what was going on.
In the Wired article, the journalist did say he reached out to them and his twin sister responded and said that they didn't have any comment on it.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, they haven't said anything.
So it's a conclusion to the case, probably a bit of an unexpected one, but mm-hmm. we all got what we wanted. We found out who he was.
Yeah, but that's that. I mean, that's all the updates that we have or the things we found most interesting while we were on a brief hiatus. We'll definitely keep you posted on any of those.
That's it. Back into it.
So if you guys want us to continue on and not go on another hiatus, give us a 5-star review, boost my confidence, tell us that we're great. I'll be very happy. If there's anything you want to suggest or any comments you want to make, just shoot us a message on the True Crime Society page or on our Instagram. Make sure you're in our Facebook group because that's where a lot of this comes from. Just True Crime Society, Instagram, Twitter, everything, our website. We're all over. So
everywhere.
Here to join. Do you have anything else to say?
Don't think so.
Bear with us. Been crazy time, as you all know, but we're doing our best. And we'll see you guys next episode.
See ya.
See you next crime.
Just kidding. No.